the construction training equipment. And what I basically do is I work with property investors to make sure that their refurbishment projects are running as profitably and efficiently and compliantly as possible. We do that through a number of different trainings. I won't go into that. What I want to share with you today is I ran a training last week, Thursday, Friday. I was going to deliver one presentation today. Then as a result of delivering training on Thursday, Friday, there was a number of investors that they highlighted something to me that I'd not been aware of in the past. And I want to share that with you today. And this was all around people pricing up work and their approach to it and their methodology behind pricing up construction work. And what fascinated me, fascinating is not the word, I don't know what the next level of fascination is, I guess, whatever the next superlative of fascination is, amazed me was that there was 12 people on the course, 12 people on the course, and I posed a scenario to the room and asked the room what their thoughts were in terms of cost on this particular thing. Now, 11 of the people of the 12 didn't know. They all openly said, I've got no idea. I really don't know how much that would be. How much would that cost? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Went around the room. And one guy, he was a Romanian guy, actually, builder from London. Oh, he operated in London. And he said it would be about $2,000. Now, I never gave him enough information to be able to, for him to be able to give me that number of $2,000. But what fascinated me was that once he said that number, $2,000, everybody else in the room then believed that piece of work to be $2,000. So what he did was he anchored everybody else to a number, which is really, really dangerous. And what it highlighted to me was, is how people use social media to price up construction work. They go into a property group or they go into on their own wall or whatever that might be. And they'll write things like, how much should I pay for a refurb? Or how much should a roof be on this particular house? Now, that's nowhere enough information to be able to get a number. But as soon as someone gives a number, what it does is it fixes everybody that's reading it, not only the person that posted it, it fixes and anchors everybody that's reading it to a number. And then, therefore, when they go out and actually try and buy that thing, and it's not that number, they start to have feelings of I'm being ripped off. I'm paying over the odds. You're now not meeting my expectations. And someone's trying to have my pants down. Now, all of those things are all as a result of one person sharing a number that was wrong in the first place. So the true cost of this piece of work, which is what I'm going to run through with you today, the true cost of this piece of work was 6,000 quid. So 300% more than what the Romanian guessed at. So it was 300% more. And when I shared 6K after everybody had been anchored to 2K, I said, well, that work, guys, is going to be $6,000. Then I went around the room and asked each individual how that made them feel. And the thoughts and feelings that I had assumed came to light. Everyone, well, you're ripping us off. We know it's 2K because he's just told us. The other builders just said 2K. I said, well, there wasn't enough information for the other guy to give you the 2K in the first place. And so this 2K was now become the number that everybody wanted to work to. And it really it shouldn't have existed in the first place. So I'll share with you now what the task was. And I've already revealed the numbers, which was a bit naughty of me, so I can't now carry out the same exercise on you lot. But we'll try anyway. So the task was a removal of a load-bearing wall. So those in the HMO space, when you come to rejigging your ground floors, and you're taking out load-bearing walls and maybe putting in stud work walls to change layouts and meet your room sizes and all the rest of it. So this is quite a common task in the HMO space and also a common task if you're doing any sort of open plan living in and kitchens, the kitchen diner, the big kitchen diner. That's a really common thing for our construction company to get involved with. And the task was remove load-bearing wall. That was it. That's all the information that I gave. And as I said, the guy came back with $2,000 as a price. Now, he's obviously guessed that, but that guess resulted in a negative feeling coming back toward me from the room when I revealed the real price. So First and foremost, what he didn't know was the size of the wall, which is really, really important. So the size of this particular wall was 5 meters in length. So the 5 meter long wall was going to be removed. If you want to take notes, I'm going to be revealing some real minutiae figures here so that you can use them in your own business when it comes to carrying out the piece of work. So some people, when I explain this, I go, oh, it's going to be $6,000 to remove this load-bearing wall. And what I hear back of clients is, well, it's only going to take you a couple of days and a couple of laborers. And I think, not true. But I love that you're sharing your perception of this piece of work with me so that I can try and understand why you think that I'm expensive. So a lot of investors are of the belief that to remove walls, you know, it's less than a grand because it's just labor and a skip, for example. So I'll get into the numbers now. Now, the first thing what we must ascertain when we're going to remove a load-bearing wall is to decide whether it is or is not a load-bearing wall. Because if it is not a load-bearing wall, the cost will be significantly less. But in this example, what I want to share with you, we're going to make the assumption that it is a load-bearing wall. So what I mean by a load-bearing wall is it's carrying something else. So it'll either be carrying another wall, which sits directly above it, or it'll be carrying maybe a roof if it's a bungalow. It could be carrying the floor, the timber floor of the first floor above that could be sat on the wall as well. All of those examples would deem the wall to be load-bearing. Now, this is not for investors to ascertain whether it's load-bearing or not. You're going to need to take some professional advice as to whether it is or it is not. So the next thing that we must do is appoint a structural engineer to ascertain whether this thing is a load-bearing wall or not. They're going to say, in this example, they're going to say, yes, it is. And they will therefore then need to carry out a structural report on the removal and design the steel beam, which needs to be inserted to carry the wall above. Now, in this example, a structural engineer, where I'm from, is going to change around the country, of course, for this piece of work. I pay around £350 for that. But if we said, nationally, we're going to go between 350 and 500. That's going to help you. So I would imagine London's going to be much more than what it is here. I'm up in North Lincolnshire, where we've just got electricity. But structural engineers, £350 where I am. You might be paying a little bit more for where you are, or maybe even less if you're up even further north than where I am. So then once the structural engineer has written that report, we then are going to need to procure the steel beam. Again, I'm in North Lincolnshire. I live near Scunthorpe, and Scunthorpe being one of the large steel producers in the UK, steel around me is quite cheap, relatively speaking, across the breadth of the UK. So a 5 meter steel for me around here is going to set me back around about £250. Now, again, if we were to say that nationally, I would put an allowance in there for, say, 250 to 500, because that's going to depend on whereabouts you are in the country. But that the 500 should cover you off nationally. So we've had an engineer's report so far. We've now procured the steel beam that we're going to need in order to emplace to carry the load above. What needs to happen next is a local authority submission. And when we talk local authority submission, you can go private, but local authority is the cheapest way, and for me, the better way. A lot of builders will say they want to work privately, but for me, I go local authority. I've got nothing to hide. I do things to the right standard, and local authority is cheaper. And where I am, they same day, if you call them out, they'll come out the same day. I'm not saying that all local authorities will deliver that service. I imagine in London, that's a little bit more challenging. But where I am, local authority submission for this piece of work is about £250 for where I am. I don't actually know if that changes across the UK. I imagine that it would. It got to cover off costs. I imagine that the local authority would put different charges on across the country. So for that reason, we're going to say that local authority submission is going to be between £250 and £500. Now, for us next, what we need to do before we start actually doing the work is we need to plan the work. So for us in my construction business, I'll now appoint my safety consultant to prepare me what's known as a set of RAMs. That is, for those that don't know, a risk assessment for the task and a method statement for the task also. Now, this is not a lot of money, you know, but it still needs to be done per project. our RAM suite for this piece of work, we would sell, we would charge around about £100 for a set of RAMs for a project this small. So we've got another £100 allowance in there for this. The next thing that we need to order and arrange is the skips for the masonry that's going to be coming out and obviously thrown away. Now, there are different ways of disposing of masonry. Some people crush it up and use it for hardcore in their back garden. Some people use a grab wagon to take it away. Some people will sell it for hardcore. I'm not really interested in that minutia. We're just going to say that we're going to provide skips. It's the easiest, quickest solution. It's not the most cost-effective, but it's the easiest, quickest solution. I just need to pick one to be able to share this example. So a wall of 5 meters and 4 inches thick, you're going to be using 2 8-yard skips. And that where I am, again, that's going to be £360, but we're going to go nationally and again and say £360 to £500 for your skips for this piece of work. What we need to now do, so we've got structural engineer now, we've ordered the steel, we've done our local authority submission, we have produced a set of RAMs, so that's risk assessments and method statements, and now we've ordered our skips for the works. The next thing that we need to arrange is our plant. When I talk about plant, I'm talking the hire of plant that's going to be required for this. Now, there are three things that we need to make sure that we have in place for removing a load-bearing wall. I'm not going to go into the detail of what they are. I'll just give you the names. So we're looking for a genie lift, which is a manual forklift truck, if you like, that's going to help lift the steel into place. A genie lift, we're going to go nationally again. Where I am, they are £100 for a week, delivered, collected and insured. But I have heard reports of them being £200 in other parts of the country. So we'll go £100 to £200 for the genie lift. And then we've got acro props, which I'm going to... Where I am, they're £8 a week. Most builders own these, but we've got to make an allowance just in case that they don't. So £8 a week, we're going to be paying for genie lift on a five meter steel beam. We're probably going to need around about six props. So that's going to come in at around £160 for the week, just for the props. Then we may need some what are known as strong boys. They come in the same cost again as the acros. And then lastly, again, most builders own these, is the still saw, and that's the mechanical saw that we use to cut the masonry. So a still saw, when you hire a still saw, again, you'll do it for the week, and it'll be £50 for the week. But what some people don't know is when you hire a still saw, you have to buy your own blade, because the hire companies make their little bit of fat on top of the hire fee. And the blade, a decent blade, is going to be another £50. So we put in £100 for the week for your still saw. Now, I'm just going to tot up now those figures at the high end of the ranges that I shared, just to give me a running total so far. And I've come at £2,720. That's a running total so far. Now, what I want you to understand at this point before I go on any further is that £2,720 is all prep. I haven't even arrived on site yet, and I'm the builder. I have not arrived on site. I've not done any work. But all of the things I've just shared with you have to be paid for in advance of the project starting. So when your builders come in to you for deposits, this is something that you need to consider. Now, I know a lot of builders, when they do this type of work, remove load-bearing walls, they ask for a minimum 50% deposit, and that's why. So I shared with you that this figure is going to land at around the £6,000 mark. We've already spent near enough £3,000 there, and they haven't started work yet. And this is the reason people are asking for deposits. Because if they go ahead and submit all that and incur all of those costs and you change your mind or back out, like, the builder's going to be left holding that baby. And that's the reason why builders, tradesmen apply this deposit and want some skin in the game from yourselves, from the investor, to make sure that they're not going to be left with this cost, with this bunch of materials and fees that they've got to pay that are now no good. There are some other materials involved, which I'm just going to run through and give you what I use as an allowance figure inside of my business, and that is pad stones. So pad stones are the concrete blocks on which the steel beam sits on either side of the emplacement. So they don't sit straight onto the masonry. We chop out a little bit more masonry. I don't want to get into any more detail than that. We fit two concrete blocks, one at each side, and it sits on top of that. Then there's a bit of slate or steel shim that we can use, a bit of sand and cement that we're going to use to point up. Then we're going to need to timber frame the beam out and wrap it in plasterboard, fireproof plasterboard. So for all of that that I've just shared, angle beads, and then skim the beam boxing and skim the two cheeks that were removed. So as an allowance figure for the plastering materials there, we put in £500 just for that, just for the materials this is now. So that's for the pad stones, the plasterboard, the beads, the skim, the slate, the shim, the sand, the cement, and all of those materials required. Now over 3K, and we haven't even put any labor on this yet. Now, for me, in my business, once again, I allow 5 days for this piece of work. And in that 5 days, what I need, I'll share with you now the breakdown of the gang that I would use to do this. A lot of investors I know try and do this with laborers or unskilled workers because the belief is that it's just muscle that you need to remove a load-bearing wall. And that may be true for the physical work. But if we're going to use unskilled workers or laborers, shall we call them, to just hump and dump, because that is basically what a load-bearing wall removal is, we've got to be supervising or having a skilled guy on site to direct, to steer, to make sure things are set properly, make sure our acros are in the right place, the beams being lifted evenly, the pad stones are incorrectly, the right stone for what's required. And then we're also going to need people to liaise with building control to ensure that the inspections are carried out during the process. So we've got to have that skilled supervisor on board. So the way that my gang is formed here is we call it a supervisor or skilled tradesman. And then we have two laborers doing the humping and dumping, as it were. It's always better to try and have that supervisor as a skilled tradesman rather than a hands-off if you want to be more productive. And hopefully that skilled tradesman carries those plastering techniques which are required to finish off the beam and the cheeks as well. So that would be my workforce. Now, here's the other part of the workforce that are going to be required. So those three guys would be required full-time for the whole 5 days. And what you're going to also need as well on hand at this point, or what I would need on hand at this point, is 99 times out of 100 this is, will require a plumber and an electrician. And that is because most walls that come out, particularly load-bearing walls, and it's usually a kitchen, they're going to have a radiator on it 9 times out of 10, and they'll have light switches or sockets on them, again, 9 times out of 10. And 9 times out of 10, those things need to be relocated rather than just removed. So there'll be a small visit on the way in to isolate or remove any services, and then they'll also require another half-day visit laterally at the end of the week in order to replace or put back wherever it needs to go. So therefore, we have an allowance in, and again, you're going to have to use some sort of national, not a national adjustment for this, but round here, my electricians are £250 a day, and as are the plumbers. And that is what we allow for in this breakdown. So we have a plumber in at £250, and that covers his two visits. And then we have Sparky in £250, that covers his two visits. Again, London, that's probably going to be more. In fact, I know it's going to be more. In fact, I dread to think how much it's going to be. Just jumping back to the other workforce as well, so the main body of works, the site supervisor, structs, skilled tradesmen, we put in £300 for the day for that, and then the labourers, we put in £300 for the both of them per day also. So my core workforce, we've got 5 days of supervision or skilled tradesmen, whichever label works best for you, which totals £500. £1,500. And then we've got a couple of labourers also at £300 a day. So that also comes to £1,500 also. So you can quickly see how we've got up to over 6K now already. So the labour, just on top of everything else that I shared before, now comes in at around about 3K there as well in just the labour, including the electrician and the plumbers as well. Now, so that's pretty much all that you're going to need. There's going to be some variances. There's going to be other things that you're going to need to consider, such as making good floors. Your floor levels, need to make sure that the floor level is going to align. We don't have to pick up a floor or chop down a floor. Once that wall's out, we could have to have some ceiling adjustments. There's a number of other things that could then happen as a result of carrying out this piece of work. I mean, I don't want to really do any more on the breakdown of pricing other than that. What I want you to consider is the 7-step process that I've used there, which I didn't tell you because I want to tell you at the end. The 7-step process that we've used, and I'm going to give you the framework now that we use to price up work. So everything I just shared there, the first thing we look at is labor. And in order to ascertain labor, we got to A, know the rates, and B, know the duration in order to get and work out what the labor rates are. So we've got labor. We've got materials. So working out what materials are required and who's going to be supplying them, yourself or we asking builder to supply. If you apply yourself, you're going to get a cost. If you get builder supply, they're going to likely be marking up by 20%. So we've got labor, materials, and then we've got professional fees. So that's where I shared structural engineer, local authority, safety consultant. You might need an architect, all of those things. So we've got labor, materials, professional fees. Then we've got waste. So the skips on this occasion was two skips, what I marked as at 180 a time. But nationally, obviously, that's going to increase. Labor, materials, skips, and professional fees. Then next we need to consider is plant hire. So when I shared with you the saw, the acros, and strong boys. Okay, so that's the five. That's those five. Then we have, what's the one I'm missing? That's five. That's five, isn't it? The last one is profit. I'm missing one. Oh, sorry, overhead. So your overhead is the next one. So the overhead, the running cost of your job. So if you're a property investor and this is your your project, you've got to know what the running cost is for you and your business on this project. So things like insurance, council tax, utilities, utility meter charges, the cost of borrowing, all of these things, we must understand what they are so that you can make a better advice or better informed calculation when it comes to appointing that builder. If you got to put into some context, let's say that you got two quotes in and they were exactly the same, but one could start today and one could start in 3 months. Like the 3 month one becomes more expensive because you've now got 3 months of overhead that you've got to cover. That makes sense. And then we've got profit on the end. Like your builder's going to apply profit 100%. What we've just shared with you there is just cost. So they were all cost numbers. Now you've got to remember that no business operates at cost. Your builder will put profit over the top of his costs. So you've got to allow for that as well. Different builders will apply different margins, and that's a given. That's easy for me to say that. So we've got, using that framework, you'll be much better equipped to price up work. Because here's the thing that people miss. So many people go building work on a labor and materials approach. They do. They go, oh, it's only going to be a day and I've got this amount of gear, so that's going to be my cost. Now, that's not a thing. You cannot price up work using labor and materials, because what happens is the other five elements that are shared with you there, out the 7-step process, those five elements, the cost of it exists. Like, you can't get away from the fact that you need a skip. You can't get away from the fact that you've got overhead costs. You can't get away from the fact that you've got to pay your professional fees. But if you don't allow for those things inside your numbers, something has to pay for it. And what happens is we start chipping at our labor, start chipping at subcontractors in order to pay things that we missed. we start putting in inferior products to pay things that we missed, or we borrow more money to pay for things that we missed, the cost still exists. So we have to allow for it. There is no use putting your head in the sand and hoping that cost will go away, because it won't. It's there. The cost exists. You can't get away from the fact that it must be paid for. I'm gonna cut it there. I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. I'm sure there's plenty of Q&A that's wanting to come out. So I'll stop it there and take your questions, if that's all right with you, Jack.
Yes, Paul, I could ask you 500,000 questions. Okay. Here is a question which is, it's a strange question. Okay. I've always been a believer that when you are the leader of a company, okay, mm-hmm. either it's a small company, a medium, large, don't matter. Your first step is to learn leadership skills rather than learn the technical skills. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because the technical skills you can hire. But from your perspective, how important it is to learn technical skills when you are doing either a BRR strategy or doing developments or conversions, how important it is to learn technical skills, and how do they affect if you don't?
That's a great question. How important is it to learn technical skills? I think it's really important in the property world because it's going to help you write your specification, which are required when it comes to getting better value for your money, to know that things are included. It allows you to have conversations with your supply chain at a better level of understanding. It's going to help you on your viewings massively to have this technical knowledge until you're in a position where you can outsource that as a service or as a role. So for me, I mean, I have to have the technical knowledge and I have to constantly develop the technical knowledge, not for my construction company, because I have a team that does that for me. But I need that knowledge to be able to deliver the best training as what I possibly can in my training business. So I guess the question is, would I need this technical knowledge if I didn't have a training business? And I think the answer's got to be yes. That's going to massively help me in choosing the right properties as well. You know, understanding what the defects are that I'm facing and what the cost of those potentially could be.
Okay, here's another question for you. Let's say someone calls you up, and I come across this literally all the time, where someone is, you know, starting out, or maybe he's still a newbie, maybe he's done one or two projects, and they still don't know how to price a project. So let's say it's a buy, refurb deal. What can they do to attract builders? Because I come across builders where they don't want to go unless they know they're going to get the project, or they want to charge up front, you know, £200-£300, £400 just to turn up and give a costing on that. Or how can one do it themselves to be able to maybe save that cost? So it's almost like you cannot appraise a deal unless you don't know the cost of the refurb. Mm-hmm. But how do you get to a point where you can do it yourself, mm-hmm. and or find a builder who will do it, but at a cost-effective price, rather than being burnt looking at 20 deals and paying off a few thousand and not getting any deal?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a unicorn. It's where do I find a unicorn, that question. You know, it's, you can't have that. It's one or t'other. So whenever we face a knowledge gap, we always only ever have two choices. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
You can either educate yourself, which pay for training, or you outsource it, like anything.
Yep.
So it would be hiring someone to come and assess that build cost for you. Now, here's my God's honest opinion on taking builders on viewings with you. It's an absolute waste of time and money. Mm-hmm. And also you're exposing yourself to huge, huge risk. Here's why it's a waste of money, because you take a builder on a viewing with you with an expectation of being able to get a cost back. Now, until you have an exit strategy, a specification, a time period, an understanding of what you're trying to achieve with that property, then they can't actually give you the price that you're looking at.
We've had this conversation. Yeah.
So, yeah. So you just, all you're doing is you're giving money away to buy someone's time. It's like paying for someone to come with you just to hold your hand. Like,
yeah,
they can point out defects. But here's the danger with taking a builder on the viewing with you. If I'll just pick on someone that I can see. If Alan Edwards calls me and says, Paul, can you come on this viewing with me? And I'm a property investor myself as well as a builder. And he shows me the property and I go, you know what, Mosh? I'm fucking having this. So I can say to the agent, listen, I want to buy this. And he's now become a sourcer for me.
Yeah.
Like, for free. That's the risk. There are a lot of builders now entering the property arena, if you like.
Yeah,
I know more and more and more guys that are being asked to come on viewings and they're going, you know, we hear about it in the merchants. This bloke asked me to come on a viewing and I'm buying it off him. I'm going to buy it. They're letting him do it. So that's the risk. So I guess the question is, who should you take if you're going to outsource it? It would be an estimator or a quantity surveyor. They're the people, or maybe an architect. Those professionals, or who I would take with me. I absolutely would not recommend anybody took a builder on a viewing because they can't meet your needs. It's impossible.
We've had this conversation.
We have. Let me just add this other thing as well. The other risk of taking a builder on a viewing with you, let's just imagine that the builder that came is desperate for work. He needs another project to go on and you're taking him on this viewing. Like, he's now going to lead you up, potentially, now going to lead you up a path where you buy a property that's maybe not going to work, and he's going to give you a number on the viewing that meets your expectations in terms of him winning the work. And then as soon as you start with your specification, you start with your program, that's when the price starts creeping up. Yeah, that's the other reason.
I've been there, and I've been through that journey.
That's how I know.
So what Paul is in essence saying is that when you are looking for, when you're looking at a project which requires refurb or conversion, your first step is not a builder. Your first step is a quantity surveyor or an estimator or an architect who could potentially look at it and say, what is potentially possible and what is it that you need to do in the first place and what do you need? And you need those in writing before you can actually have a builder in coming in and giving you a quotation. Because if a builder comes in, like he said, and he's got this agenda of picking up his next project, he could potentially lead you into a loss-making project.
Yeah.
And when you buy the project and the costs keep, you know, creeping up, that is not the way to go. The way to go is first speak with a quantity surveyor or, like you said, an architect. And that is a very dangerous position to be in, to be calling a builder in the first place. And I get this all the time. Most people don't even know that, you know, all they think is, okay, it's a builder's job. I'm just going to call a builder. No, it's not. Builder needs more clarity on what needs to be done. And that comes from a quantity surveyor and or an architect, depending on the project. So do not approach a builder. And when you do approach a builder, from my perspective, this is what I tend to normally do. I normally message about 5 or 6 builders. Out of those 5 or 6, sometimes even more, I'd only maybe get 3 or 4 people turn up to give me a quotation because the rest of them are busy. I would take 3 quotations and I would choose the one which is more suitable, not the cheapest one, the more suitable. That means the more, the one which is the most appropriate for that project. If you pick the cheapest one, there's a danger. If you pick the most, if you pick the one which is, you know, maybe you bring a builder and he's just a general builder, doesn't know more technical of building ground up or, you know, whatever that may be, or maybe just not familiar with conversions or airspace development, you need to bring the right builder in place to be able to do a job. Like, then we've had this conversation with Paul, but okay, Paul, I'm going to ask you one more question. What is it that people need to be aware of when they're looking at projects? What are the few tips that you think, maybe 3 or 4 or 5, people need to look out for and be aware of to make sure that they can make a project profitable or find a project that's profitable?
For me, it's such a massive question, mate. It's such a huge topic.
It's not easy.
I think rather than the top 5, I'll give you the top 1. Time.
Yeah.
Time is your biggest cost. I can't tell. I do a full day on this, on teaching time inside one of our programs. We do 1 day a month on it. It's that important. I'm just going to share a formula into the chat. So what that stands for is time plus standard equals cost. Like the cost being your build cost. That cost cannot exist without the input data to that formula.
Yeah.
So if you don't know when you're going to start, you don't know when it's going to, when you need it to finish, you don't know when your borrowing's landing, you don't know how long each elemental piece of work takes. Like, if you don't know that, you can't know the cost. It's not possible. No. Standard's the same. So your standard, I'm talking exit strategy, I'm talking what kitchen, your specification, the drawings, all of that. Without that data, the cost can't exist. Now, if you're getting prices back from trades without an understanding of standard or time, that cost or the price, the quote, whatever word you want to use, is not based on anything. And if it's not based on anything, that exposes you to massive risk.
Yeah.
So if you've just got a cost that is based with no input data of time and standard, then the cost is a guess. Now, again, I did this on the two-day training I shared with you earlier about the guy that shot out the 2K. I did the same exercise with this. And the question I posed to the room was, how much is a gym membership? And people was like, well, mine's 20 quid. Mine's 90 quid. Like, well, why are they different? Well, because I can go in mine at any time of day. So the time. Mine's, I can only go in between 4 and 6 on the evening. Again, time. That's the time difference. And the standard, the specification, the inclusions, the 90 quid membership included swimming. It included PT, included nutritional plan. It included a free towel and shower and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But the 20 quid guy, he just got to go and in the weight room and that's it. And he couldn't go anywhere else. And that's why they were so different. And then it was, the next example I give is, can you give me a price for a holiday? Like, well, where am I going? Which is, again, standard. How long am I going for? Time. So without knowing where I'm going and how long I'm going for, I can't give you a cost. And that's the same thing with a refurb.
Yep.
Like, how much is the refurb going to be? Well, I need to know what you're going to do with it. And I need to know what your time expectations are so I can then calculate that. If you want a job doing really, really quickly and I've got to load it with labor, it will be more expensive in terms of the delivery of the refurb. However, you get your asset back quicker, which turns into a liability, turns into an asset, an income generating asset, rather than leaving it a liability for longer.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Yes, it does. So it does.
Time is my biggest tip. Like, if you've got a builder lined up ready to start and he can't start for 6 months, then you've got to build in that 6 months of downtime into your liability costs, into your losses.
Yeah. In fact, let me add something here, which a lot of people, majority people, don't realize, which is, if you think it's going to take you 3 months, the likelihood of it is going to be probably 6 months. If you think it's going to cost you £100, the likelihood is it's probably going to cost you maybe more like 150, 170. If you think you're going to build a business in 2 years, the likelihood is probably 3 or 4.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people underestimate the cost, the time, in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't realize what they can achieve in 10 years, which is, again, the compounding that we talk about all the time. But if you are calculating a project, 10% contingency is just the basic appraisal. I believe it needs to be a bit more. And I see it all the time. And majority people do not realize that the downtime or the delay in the timing of project completion is going to cost you more in terms of finance. It's going to cost you more in terms of the time value of your own. So there's a time value that you have of your own. It's going to cost you more in terms of that as well, which is what I think most people just overlook or underestimate or just don't care enough to the detail. Share your thoughts on that.
Everyone's in camp wing it. They are. Yeah. Like, there's so many people just try and wing everything.
Wing everything, yeah.
Doing it just like, if you want to be professional in the refurbishment space, you must have a framework. You must have an approach to it. Because if you don't have that, you by default are the opposite. You're amateur. You have no framework and you have no approach and you're guessing it and everything's that. Like, you can't do that. You know, if you do that, what you will get stung at some point. You might get lucky on the first one, the second one, the third one. But then after that, someone's going to come and put something right inside you and you're going to lose a shit ton of money.
Yeah. Let me share with everyone. This is something that will make you kind of give you more clarity on how it works. We were doing a development of 4 million GDP in Wembley. And we were paying a consultant £1,000 a day. And he wasn't even happy about that £1,000 because he normally charges more than that. And we had actually a written agreement with him to give him 24 days of work in the next 2 years. So which was practically a 1 day a month. And he was going to get £1,000 a day. And all he came to do was prepare a schedule of work for what needs to be done. And like I said, he wasn't happy with £1,000 a day. Now, for those of you who are actually heading towards BRR deals or conversions or developments, think of paying £1,000 a day to someone just to prepare a schedule, just to make sure that the builder is able to do his job in the first place. Just able to do his job. Just able to know what is the next step for him when he turns up on site. And it's unbelievable, like you said, how many people just trying to wing it and not go into the detail. And I mean some real detail to a point of, I remember, I mean, this is, this will give people a bit more clarity. We were bouncing between me and one of the investors. We were bouncing between choosing two lenders. And we were literally sitting there for 2 days down to pennies choosing between the two and the benefits. And we actually ended up choosing the one which is gonna cost us more because there's an additional quality benefit or the time benefit that we had. But again, it just goes to the detail. Imagine two people with value worth £2,000-£3,000 a day bouncing and making sure that you're choosing between the two lenders down to pennies and detail to point, which is most people ignore. This is the kind of detail you need when you're actually doing a project. I remember I did a project where I was not necessarily winging it, but I just didn't have the time to go into enough detail of it. And I remember the builder calling me up and say, I need grout. That costs £12. My time to go and pick it up and drop it off more than an hour, £500 worth of my time. Just because in my agreement, I didn't put it that I'm not supposed to go and pick up this stuff. That's the kind of detail you need. Share your thoughts, share a story on it, Paul. You would have some really interesting stories on this.
So many of them, mate. So many. We had a guy on the. It wasn't this training. It was a training before, and he was sharing. As soon as he turned up, he had a real chip on his shoulder. And I don't know if you know, but my vision seed for people that work with me is make more profit from your refurbishment projects. And this guy came in the room, and he had a real like. He thought he was better than me straight away, like, which is okay. And he sat down, his arms folded, and he was giving it the big one. And he goes, let me tell you how you make profit from refurbishment project. Did he call me mate? I think he called me mate. And I went, go on then, share. He said, my last development, I did a HMO conversion. And the showers that I bought, I shopped around online, which took me a few days. But I eventually found 6 showers in B&Q in Northampton, which, by the way, was 90 miles away, half price. So I went and got them. I said, you do know that's just cost you like 3 times what it would have cost you to pay full price in Screwfix that you could have had in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And he was like, what are you on about? And he would not have it. And I drew it all out for him and explained it all. And he did not understand it. And I see investors do this shit all the time, hunting around in bargain bins and buying broken tiles and end-of-line wallpaper. There was only one roll of it. And you think, what are you doing? And they drive miles to go get it. That's not where profit lives. Profit lives in effective, efficient time management. A programmer works will absolutely change your world on developments. Transform it. Like every day that my projects go over, £700. If I lose a day on a program, it costs me £700. Like, that's a lot of fucking showers to go buy from Northampton. just do it. Pay the full whack. Pay the subbies. I've even paid subbies more to finish quicker. Like, if I get a price off a subbie, and a subbie comes in and says, your rewire is going to be 5K, Paul, I can start in 3 weeks. And I go, listen, if you can start next week, how much is it going to be? Oh, I'm going to have to let down such and such and such and such. Okay, how much is that going to cost? Oh, right. I'm not really comfortable letting down a client. Well, okay. Well, how much will it cost you to ring your other client and tell him you've got COVID? Another 500 quid. Amazing. Right. So I'll pay him another 500 quid so we can start 2 weeks earlier, because he's just saved me like 700 quid a day for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Can't even do the maths.
And most people don't quite have clarity on that. It's not a game of profits. It's a game of time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, time is, and it's so cheesy saying that time is money, but it really, really is. Yeah. And until you run your own business, your own profitable business with overheads, you don't. Yeah. It's hard to understand.
It's hard to understand that. Yeah, yeah, I get that. Okay, so someone's asking a question. I think it's Sean asking a very basic but an amazing question. How do you choose a reliable builder?
Ooh. That's not a basic question.
I always tell people builders are going to give you pain. You just got to find the one that gives you the least pain.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. To sum it up, Sean, and I haven't got enough time to run through that question in full, but what I'll direct you to is, if you Google this phrase, pre-qualification questionnaire, it's abbreviated to PQQ, pre-qualification questionnaire, you'll get templates on Google. And if you get those completed, you're doing well. You want a really stripped down version. And anybody, what a PQQ process tells me in a nutshell is, if someone can be asked to fill it in, they can be asked to work with me and turn up. That's the test. Not really the content of the form, but having the
filling it.
Yeah, the actual doing the work of filling it in and pre-qualifying themselves.
No, Falake would be able to, might have some questions.
Hi, Paul. Mine is also quite basic as well. I was going to ask you, you know, when you talked about the seven steps to costing a project, mm-hmm. When you talked about material, you said if the builder supplies, you add 20%. Is that because of VAT, or is that because of the profit of the fact that they're doing all the work for you?
Yes, the latter. So the profit, the markup. And the reason that that's applied is because, let's say that you provide your own kitchen from Howdens and you supply it and it turns up. Now, if I do it, it means I'm the one that's spending the time, again, time being a cost, in going to the merchants to organize delivery, to be on the phone, managing broken parts, missing parts, damages, receipting it when it gets delivered, so, and then getting it into the house, getting rid of the rubbish, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's what the markup is for, really.
Right. Okay, brilliant. Thank you. Your construction training, is that for investors or is that for laborers?
No, it's for investors. So
I will. Is it for investors, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't catch that at the start. Now we've got a couple of questions in the chat, Jack. Kyle is asking, he's from Rotherham, so somewhere not far from you. And he's wondering, on a new build development, and wants to know what the estimated cost per square foot would be on a site in the current market conditions.
Don't know. Don't do new build.
Okay. That okay. Isn't... Sorry.
I'm the refurb guy.
Okay. Fair enough.
I could maybe answer that question. Which location are we looking at here?
Rotherham. So
a centre of square foot.
I'm not familiar with Rotherham, but I'm guessing it's somewhere.
You don't want to be neither.
It's somewhere up north, right?
Yeah,
it's somewhere Yorkshire. Yeah, Yorkshire.
It's in Yorkshire. So yeah. In Yorkshire, I think at this moment you can get away with about 150, 160 per square foot with medium specification. If you are anywhere in London or Greater London, I mean, I'm not even talking about Central London, just Greater London, you're looking at 220 plus at the moment. Up north, you can get away with 150, 160, but you do have to keep it very controlled. With 150, that is a very tight space to be in. But normally, if you start to go a higher specification, minimum these days, you're looking at 200, like I said, medium specification. I hope that answers your question.
Fantastic. Thank you. Paul, if it's okay with you, can you share your details in the chat so people know how to get hold of you? I do have a question here about property development, but obviously you don't do that. So say Rajesh, if you ask, Cam is coming on next, he's a developer, so he might be able to answer that question for you. I think that's all the questions we have, actually.
Thank you, Paul. Now, go ahead.
Yeah. Ritika was asking Paul where he's based, which he's mentioned, Scunthorpe, and how do you help investors?
So we have, what we got, 4 minutes. So I run a training business, four levels of training. First thing is a free masterclass webinar online session. They run every month in the middle of the month. I think the next one's on the 20th-ish. It's on the website, which I've just shared into the chat. And then we have a two-day in-person experience, which is free. So you come with us for 2 days. That's completely free of charge. All we take is a 500 quid deposit, which you get back at the end of the 2 days. That's just so we've got some commitment from you that you're going to turn up. Then I run a five-day project management training. That's again in person. I run them four times a year. And then I run an annual academy where I work with 20 people to make sure that they're all got their refurbs on the ball throughout the year.
Great, babe. Ali has asked, she's emailed more than 20 builders, three turned up to a quote, none agreed to work under JCT. It's a 25K renovation in Darlington. She's asking, should she go for a verbal or email agreement?
Neither. Stick to your guns. You're the employer in this relationship. And if you're getting people running away from a JCT, it tells me that they can't stick to it. Or why would they not sign it? The only tip I'll give you when it comes to contracting is this. Most trades builders are fearful of the word contract. They genuinely are, for whatever reason. May have been stung in the past, may not just not like the language. Just change the word contract to the word agreement, and you'll get a much better result. And it's just a change in a word. It means the same thing. Contract simply means an agreement between two parties or people. So we just use the word agreement instead. Instead of sign the contract, it's let's just put some signatures on an agreement. Like, it's so much softer from in my experience. Anyway, it works. Agreement works. Contract doesn't.
Brilliant. Thank you. Alex wants to know, he's doing a smallish project, a refurb on his small house. He's asking if you would have a builder prepare the schedule of works or get someone else to do it and then present it with the person doing the work.
That's a tough question to answer because I don't know what the builder is that he's talking to. There's so many variables to that. I don't want to give an answer that could be perceived or received wrong. So I'm going to pass on that.
I will tackle that.
I like a challenge. I've learned one thing in my life. Stick to your basics. Something goes wrong, I always go back to basics. And basics tells me that when you are looking to get something done, either it's a schedule of work or an appraisal, stick to the professional that specializes in that. Most builders cannot do an appraisal. Most builders cannot prepare a schedule. Most. I'm not talking about the exception, I'm talking about the rule. So the basics tell me that always go to your specialist. A quantity surveyor's job is a quantity surveyor's job. It's not a builder's job.
Yeah, good. Yes.
Most builders cannot do it. Some can. I'm not saying they can't. But like I said, we're not talking about the exception. We're talking about the rule. So always stick to your basics, which is let the professional do their job. If you ask me, I can prepare a schedule of work. Works. I can do it. Would I do it? Answer is no. I won't do it myself. The likelihood of me getting something wrong and costing me tens of thousands is heavy. I am not qualified to do that, even though I know I could do it. Okay? So please go and stick what you are good at and delegate the rest. In the process, you can learn that. There's no harm in that. Okay? But eventually, as a leader, you're not supposed to be doing everything in the first place. You're supposed to be just, you are the coordinator of things. You coordinate and arrange things. Your job is not to do what Paul is doing here, okay? Paul has his own speciality. Let him do his work. And so stick to your basics, which is stick to your specialist. Like I said, we paid £1,000 a day, £24,000 over 24 months to someone who prepared our schedule. And, you know, and we've paid, you know, likewise, like that kind of money, £1,000 a day, many, many times over to many, many consultants. And when you actually reflect back, they actually save you a lot more. So they may charge you £1,000 a day, but when you actually reflect back, they've saved £3,000-£4,000 a day on average. Okay. Well, I hope that answers your question to some extent.
That was a good answer, mate.
And for those of you who are watching this, and I mean, I could literally sit here and speak with Paul and ask him 500,000 questions, and we have so much synergy and fire between us, but we time is not going to allow that. So if I was you, I would actually go and check out Paul's training. If you are thinking of heading towards refurbs, it will, like, I can't tell you the amount of money and hassle. Just not forget about the money and the hassle and the time it's going to save you is unbelievable. Remember, I gave you a story about how my builder called me up and said, get me grout. That's a 12-pound bag. And I had to take an hour of my time to go and get that bag just because there was no one else there on that day. That's like £1,000 that I lost just because I had to leave my work. It just breaks the momentum of creativity that I'm in. So just the hassle and the time it's going to save you is amazing. So go check out his website. Go and attend his sessions. He's absolutely amazing at what he does. He's very grounded, very down to earth as well. And he's very real, very, very real. So go and check it out. And Paul, absolute pleasure to have you here, buddy. I promise you that you're going to be in many of our next sessions, and I'm going to ask you different questions.
Jack, always a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.